opportunity, and I'd like to thank all of you for coming here. Okay, so so today I'll talk about Majorana fermions in solid-state systems, how they can appear as a quasi-particle in a strongly interacting system, and how to realize and detect them in reality. So so I noticed that the audience have different backgrounds, so I try to be pedagogical, and please feel free to interact and ask a lot of questions. So so I started this line of research with my PhD advisor, Charlie Kane, at University of Pennsylvania. And after 3 or 4 years, I'm still having fun with this subject. So I hope you won't feel bored within an hour. Okay, so let me start with a very brief history of Majorana fermions. So we all know that Ms. Majorana proposed this particle as a fundamental particle which can be a candidate for neutrinos. That was quite a while ago. And for me, I'll just say that a crucial property of Majorana fermions is that it's a particle that's it's identical to its own antiparticle, so mathematically it's expressed by this identity. The creation and annihilation of operator of this particle is the same object. And so far, I guess it's fair to say that we don't have a definite evidence for Majorana fermion as a fundamental particle in nature. Now, since 2000, this Majorana fermion has grabbed the attention of condensed matter physicists. And so two people, Nick Reed, student Green, and Alexei Kitaev, they realized that Majorana fermions can exist as quasi-particles in supermatters. And that, I think, has, since then, it has the subject has attracted a lot of attention. So the idea here is simple. In order to get an object which is its own antiparticle, we can have a linear superposition, equal weight linear superposition of electron operator and hole operators. And from this identity, we will find this gamma operator is a Majorana operator. And one way to get that is to think about quasi-particles in supermatters. In supermatters, we have a charged 2E Cooper pair floating around forming a condensate. In that case, a hole can bind with a Cooper pair, a charged 2E object, and form an electron. So we have a free conversion between electrons and holes in a supermatter. That's why the real excitation of a supermatter is a linear superposition of electrons and holes. So that opens up the possibility of achieving a quasi-particle that is real. And that would give us a Majorana fermion. So so there are two very nice models that realize this. The first one is a Kitaev model. It describes a one-dimensional fermion system hopping in the chain with a p-wave pairing term. Now, one way to solve this model is to rewrite the electron operator, a complex electron operator, in terms of its real and imaginary part. So each one of them, gamma 1 and gamma 2, are Majorana operators. And by rewriting it this way, what we can do is we can map the original fermion problem into a Majorana chain, where we have each site, the electron at each side is replaced by two Majorana fermions, and they have nearest neighbor hoppings. The hopping has this dimerized pattern. So if the hopping between two Majorana fermions that belong to different sites is stronger, in this case, the system has an interesting property that it has an isolated, unpaired Majorana fermions at the end. So if we go back and look at what this Majorana fermion really means in the language of supermatters, we can do it in a different way. We can write the Hamiltonian, the mean field Hamiltonian for supermatters in terms of a Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian, which includes both the kinetic energy part as well as the pairing part. And we diagonize this this big matrix, HBDG Hamiltonian, and we can rewrite the original Hamiltonian in terms of its eigenstates. So here, all positive energy states appear, but we find that there's a special zero energy bound states that are localized at the two ends of the system. And these objects, if I write down its expression in terms of the original electron creation operators, we found that this object satisfies this reality condition. That is what we call a Majorana bound state. The interesting thing, there's an immediate consequence is that the existence of this zero energy Majorana bound state means that the ground state, the many body ground state of the system, is degenerate. You can see that out of these two Majorana fermions, gamma 1 and gamma 2, that are localized at the two ends of the system, we can construct a fermion operator, psi. This psi operator does not appear in the energy. So this psi fermion level can either be occupied or empty. That leads to a twofold degeneracy. So the message here is that when Majorana bound states exist in the system, there's a many-body ground state degeneracy.
Doesn't commute with fermion number?
Yes.
So how do you explain that? Fermion number is
that's actually a very good question. And in fact,
towards the second part of my talk, I will explicitly mention that. But here, let me just say that this is a there are two ways you can look at it. One way is to say I don't study this. Okay, so what originally Kitaev envisioned is not to have an isolated 1D chain, but it's a 1D chain coupled to a three-dimensional simulator. So electrons can hop from the chain to the 3D simulator. Or if you in solid state physics, what people usually do is they view this Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian as a mean field theory for simulators. In fact, in the 1960s, the fact that this Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian does not conserve the number of electrons is a big puzzle. So people tried very hard trying to understand whether this approximation is okay or not. In fact, in the second part of my talk, I'll mention explicitly that this has consequences for Majorana fermions.
So I have a very naive question. I mean, I follow the formalities, but why is this called p-wave? I mean, there are no p-waves.
It's p-wave because if you look at this pairing term, it's ci, ci plus 1. I are the site labels, label the sites. It's equal to minus itself if you switch I plus 1 and I. So that's what the p-wave simulator is.
Parity
odd, yeah.
You switch.
Yeah, exactly. Under inversion around the center of a bond,
yeah,
you will switch the I plus 1 bond, I plus 1 side and I side. Then this pairing term changes sign. Mm-hmm. Or another way you can think about it is that if you think about a Cooper pair made out of two electrons on neighboring sides, the wave function will change to itself if you reorder them. Right? It's Pauli exclusion principle.
Okay, so now I have another conceptual question. In the first slide, you talked about BCS superconductivity in Cooper pairs. In the first slide, you talked about BCS superconductivity in Cooper pairs.
Yes.
But we understand BCS superconductivity.
Yeah.
Are there such Majorana states in the BCS?
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll talk about it in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sure. So is there any relation between this and, you know, the spin one chain where it gets
different. It's different. The ground state degeneracy is different.
There's no relation.
There's no immediate relation with this. Because in that case, you have four-fold ground state degeneracy.
Okay.
Each end gives you twofold. Right. But in this case, the whole system only has a twofold degeneracy. I'll talk about that.
These gamma matrices you're introducing has nothing to do with direct gamma matrices.
This is just an operator.
Yeah, no, the other ones. I mean, they are the Dirac gamma matrices, but I presume your little gammas.
Oh, little gamma is also an operator, actually.
Oh, really?
It's an operator, yeah.
It's not
a matrix, it's an operator, yeah. It's a linear superposition of electrons, creation and annihilation operator.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it has a representation in terms of Dirac gamma matrices, I presume.
Yes. yes and no. I mean, okay. So a single Majorana operator, they intercommute with each other. Okay, that is like the gamma matrix.
But that's an explicit representation.
Right. That's right.
So you're saying it's sort of a formal operator.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So there's another very famous model, Reed and Green model, that describe Majorana fermions in two dimensions, in a two dimensional system. Again, they envision a spinless Px plus I Py simulator, so that it's in two dimensions and the Cooper pair has a finite angular momentum. So I'll just say briefly that if I again look at the mean field Hamiltonian for simulators, it's exactly analogous to the Hamiltonian for a quantum Hall system. And so this mathematical similarity immediately leads to the conclusion that in this P plus IP simulator, there are also edge states. So the system in the bulk is gapped, has a full pairing gap, but there are gapless edge states circling around the edge of the sample. And moreover, these edge states are chiral, the edge states only move in one direction. A difference from the edge states of quantum Hall system is that the positive energy states and the negative energy states are the particle Hall conjugate of each other. So really, the system only have half degree of freedom as an ordinary chiral electron. So it's described by this relativistic Hamiltonian, where the gamma is a real field instead of a complex field. So that's a chiral Majorana edge state. And if we shrink the edge to a finite hole, and if we thread a flux in there, that becomes basically a vortex. And depending on the number of flux we put in there, if it's an odd number of H over 2E flux, the finite size quantization works out so that we have exact zero energy states. That's a zero energy Majorana bound state. So what really got solid state physics excited about Majorana bound states is that they have non-locality and non-abelian statistics. So let me just review what is known about it. So in the system with Majorana zero modes or Majorana bound states, there's a ground state degeneracy. And one way you can think about it is that imagine that I can construct a fermion operator out of two spatial localized Majorana bound states, gamma 1, gamma 2. And this psi tells me that that there's a two-level degeneracy associated with this fermion level, whether this fermion level is occupied or empty. That gives me a two-fold degeneracy. And if the system has 2n pairs of Majorana bound states, that leads to 2 to the n degenerate ground states. And you can view them as n qubits. And what state the system really is in is a kind of quantum information, and it's stored non-locally. There's no local operation that I can perform to change one ground state to the other. So that's useful from the quantum information point of view because the system would be naturally immune to local decoherence. So moreover, if I switch the position of two Majorana fermions, if I grade them in time, what happens is that the system can change its ground state. So we know that in textbook quantum mechanics, there are bosons and fermions. If I switch the position of two bosons, the wave function doesn't change. If I switch two fermions, the wave function changes to minus sign. In two dimensions, there are also fractional excitations with fractional statistics. So if I switch the position of two fractional charges, they would pick up a fractional phase. But a Majorana fermion is something even more dramatic. So after I upgrade them, the ground state manifold changes. Grading basically performs a unitary operation that changes the many-body ground states.
What protects the degeneracy of these two states?
So any operator that can write down must involve the product of two Majorana operators, because each Majorana operator by itself would change the fermion parity. So we believe fermion parity is a fundamental symmetry in the system. So I'm not allowed to write down any term that's just gamma itself. So the term I can write down is something like gamma 1 and gamma 2, the product of them. Now, these two wave functions are, these two Majorana bound states that are spatially separate. So the term that gives rise to this product of gamma 1 and gamma 2 term are exponentially small.
So even if you have a system which is very inhomogeneous, you're saying, they will
still be degenerate. Yeah, right, because these bound states really are very localized. If they're far apart, then the splitting would be very small. Okay, so So due to these properties, Majorana fermions have been proposed to be to have the potential for topological quantum computation, a particular kind of fault tolerant quantum computation, and people have proposed a framework how to get there. The first step, of course, is we need to find a realization of Majorana fermions in solid state physics. Then we want to detect them, and we want to test its non-local property. And after that, we may think about how to initialize a system with Majoranas. We want to initialize the ground of system, and then we want to grade Majorana fermions to perform a local unitary operation. That's like a quantum computation, and then we want to read out the final states. So this would be a prototype of quantum computation, and even all this has been done, there's an issue that mathematicians realize. Namely, this Majorana fermions cannot make a universal quantum computer. But that's maybe good enough. Okay, question?
They cannot. They cannot.
Is there some simple explanation?
Yeah, there is. So if you look at the grading rule for these Majorana fermions, so if you switch the position of two Majoranas, you basically only perform something like a 90 degree rotation. But to get a universal quantum computation, you want to be able to perform any arbitrary angle of rotation.
Question?
Yeah.
What makes this non-abelian?
What makes them non-abelian?
Yeah, that is. From what you argued, I can understand that they're abelian anions.
Okay. Oh yeah.
They're
okay.
Phases, but if they're non-abelian, they're
switched. Yeah, there's a simple explanation. Okay. So if I switch two Majoranas, what happens is that these Majorana fermions, you see, they live in the vortex. They live in the inside the vortex of the semiconductor, and the vortex has a branch cut in it, right? If you think about the vortex order parameter, it goes from 0 to 2 pi. If you sort of move one Majorana circling around the other one, what happens is that the vortex has to cross the vortex, basically the semiconductor phase inside this loop will change by 2 pi.
Right.
Right. If you move a vortex around the path, the phase inside this loop changes by 2 pi. Now, if you look at the definition of these Majorana operators, there's always this e to the I phi over 2 floating around. This phi is the semiconducting phase. Mm-hmm. So when the semiconducting phase changes by 2 pi, this whole object goes to minus itself. Mm-hmm. That's what I wrote here. Right. Mm-hmm. And now, usually you will say this is just some abelian stuff. It just changes the phase. But remember that the physical state, see, Majorana operator itself does not give you a finite Hilbert space. You need two Majorana fermions together to define a Hilbert space. So, and the way you can see this, there's no way to quantize a single Majorana fermion, basically. When you have two Majorana fermions together, you can construct this psi operator, which satisfies the usual fermion commutation relationship. And when one of them changes sign, gamma 1 changes to minus gamma 1, but gamma 2 doesn't change. In that case, this psi will go to psi dagger. Mm-hmm. That means that's the way the ground state system changes. Imagine originally you are in the zero state of the Fermi operator. It's annihilated by psi. After you do this braiding, you are going into the state which is 1. It's the only thing.
Does that give you one of the SU2 matrices?
One of the SU2.
So I'm looking for an SU2. If it's not abelian, I'm presuming that.
You cannot perform all SU2 operation. That's the reason why it's not a universal quantum computer. You can only perform something like a 90 degree rotation, something like rotating 0 to 1, but not to an arbitrary linear superposition.
Okay, that's what I was looking
for.
So is it correct to say that Fierch-Schwen Majorana fermions, which is operation essentially, you get a non-abelian discrete group of
discrete,
the axis, the possible axis,
exactly.
Different dimensional.
You can think of it exactly. You can think about rotation about different axes in a many-body field of space, something like that. But you can only perform a certain set, a discrete set of operations. So there are, I should mention, there are proposals using some extra operation, not just grading the Majoranas, to complement this kind of grading. And that may cover the whole set of SU2 rotation. But that part is non-topological. It's not as protected as.
In the rest of my talk, I will not focus too much on quantum computation, but I'll focus more on the first few steps along the way. Namely, to realize Majorana fermions, to detect them, and to test this non-locality. So going back to your question, is it possible that in a textbook, S-wave spin singlet semiconductor, that we have Majoranas? The answer is no. Realizing Majorana fermions isn't that easy. The key challenge here is that, remember, I keep saying that these two models are all for spinless fermions, which in practice they mean that they are spin-polarized fermions. The reason is simple. In the textbook S-wave semiconductor, we have pairing between spin-up electrons and spin-down electrons. So then the quasi-particle operator is a linear superposition of the creation operators for spin-up electrons and the annihilation operator for spin-down electrons. Now, this object itself is not a Majorana fermion. It's not equal to its conjugate. This is just an ordinary complex fermion. So that doesn't work. So this tells us, the lesson we learned is that in order to achieve Majorana fermions, we need to avoid the fermion doubling problem. We want to have a single species of fermion and let them pair within themselves. In that way, we can get a Majorana fermion. So to put everything in the context, there has been two previous proposals, mainly two previous proposals for Majorana fermions. One is the quantum Hall state, a filling factor 5 over 2. You can view that as a sort of a p-wave snapshot for composite fermions. This state is spin polarized. Okay. So another candidate is some kind of unconventional snapshot or superfluid, for example, strontium ruthenite. So over the years, we have a lot of evidence that this state is indeed a chiral p-wave snapshot. The only problem, I mean, Catherine is expert here, but I guess the only problem is that for this system to have Majorana fermion, we need something like a half vortex, which costs a divergent, which has a huge energy cost. Okay, so starting in 2008, Charlie Kane and I proposed another platform for realizing Majorana fermions. We use something called a proximity effect devices with just S-wave, ordinary S-wave snapshot. So the basic idea is we want to break the task into two parts. The first part is we want to find a nice unconventional metal that doesn't have the fermion doubling problem to start with. We only want to have a single fermion species. And then the second step is to, instead of relying on nature for them to become a supernatural, we introduce an extra supernatural explicitly and induce supernaturality. So the system that we use is something called a topological insulator. So these are a new class of band insulators which has a protected surface state. And what's special about these materials is that their surface states are unusual. They are described by Dirac fermions. Let me back up a little bit. So this is the edge states or the surface states of a topological insulator. They are spin split. So at each momentum, there's only one definite spin state. Instead of both spin up and spin down, the spin basically is locked to the momentum. And moreover, these topological inserts have the special property that there's only an odd number of these spin non-degenerate Dirac fermions. A two-dimensional topological insert has a right-moving edge states with spin up and the left-wing edge states with spin down. And a 3D topological insulator has surface states which are described by these Dirac fermions. And in the ideal case, there's only a single Dirac fermion. And recent experiments have observed these states in two-dimensional mercury telluride and cadmium telluride systems, quantum wells, and in a number of three-dimensional materials. And here is an experimental result from Princeton group. They found these surface states have this linear dispersion, which is a signature of Dirac fermion. Yeah, so they shine X-rays into the system and kick electrons out. And then by measuring the energy and the momentum of the outgoing electron, they can deduce what are the energy momentum dispersion before they are getting out. So this basically gives you a map of the band structure of solids. Okay, so in high energy physics, there's something called a fermion doubling theorem, which says in any two-dimensional system, there must be an even number of fermions if the system is time reversal invariant. And the surface state of topological insulator is almost a counter example, except that we now remember that it doesn't really live in two dimensions. It lives at the boundary of a 3D system. And the reason that this fermion doubling theorem exists is also simple. If you have a single Dirac fermion, the energy spectrum is not bounded from above and not bounded from below. Whereas in a solid state system, we always have a finite cutoff. So in the usual 2D system, the best you can do is to have the lower part of the Dirac cone to bend up again. But that will lead to two fermion surfaces instead of just one. And for topological insulator, it can get around this problem because the upper and the lower energy spectrum can merge into the conduction and valence bands of the 3D system. So that's how they can exist. So, um, so okay, So so we can consider putting an external S-wave selector on top of this topological inserter. The purpose of the external selector is to induce superconductivity. And the nice thing is that we can just use a simple textbook S-wave selector, and we induce pairing between spin up and spin down electrons. Now, superconductivity basically only affects states near the Fermi energy, so we can project this pairing term onto the basis of the band basis where everything is around the Fermi surface. Then this projection will tell me that the S-wave pairing is effectively transformed into a P-wave pairing. And you would expect that because the Fermi surface now is spin non-degenerate. It has the same degree of freedom as an ordinary spinless Fermi. So it's not a surprise that this is true. And we explicitly did a calculation, a simple calculation, and found that at the vortex of this interface simulator, there's a Majorana bound state, just like an ordinary 2D P plus IP simulator. And moreover, at the domain wall between a magnet and a simulator, which covers the edge of a 2D quantum spin hall, a 2D topological insulator, we also get a Majorana bound state. So the figure on the left is an analog or a realization of a 2D P plus IP simulator, which has Majorana bound state in the vortex core. And the figure on the right is a realization or an analog of the original Kitaev model in one dimension. So they are, that's the way we can physically realize Majorana fermions. So the I'll mention a little bit about the right now the experimental status. So we actually found that even before the topological insulator was discovered, back in 1996, there was an experiment on niobium simulators on top of bismuth antimony. So they measured the current voltage relation in this system, and they found there's a finite supercurrent at zero voltage. And this is a signature for a good proximity effect between the simulator niobium and the material bismuth antimony. But bismuth antimony is actually a topological insulator if it's in a semiconducting range. So this experiment actually gives us a good hint that at least proximity effect should work in this in these kind of heterostructures.
So there's a spontaneous current.
Yeah, you can think what they measure is they can pass a current in the system and measure the voltage drop. In the usual system, a current always accompanied by a voltage drop. But here you can see that up to, let's say, 3 milliamp, there's no voltage drop. That's a supercurrent. Usually, at 0.5 voltage, yeah. Usually, you can think of it that way, yeah. Except that if you don't connect them to external leads, that we cannot never have a persistent current, right? The current will have nowhere to go. But now, if you connect them to leads, then that will happen, yes. Okay, so very soon after our proposal, there's another candidate system for Majoranas proposed by the Summers group at the University of Maryland. So they considered, instead of using a topological insulator, they considered using an ordinary semiconductor like indium arsenide. And the idea there is that these semiconductors have strong spin orbit coupling. So they would have a direct fermion near the k equals zero. But as I mentioned earlier, this is a real 2D system. So the direct cone has to bend up again to get a minimum of n, to get a bottom of the connection band. So you still end up having two Fermi surfaces. What they further proposed is to introduce another Zeeman field, an extra magnetic field, basically, to open up the degeneracy here, and then require Fermi energy to be fine-tuned to lie within this gap. If all this is achieved, one would end up having a single Fermi surface. And then they imagine putting a simulator again and to induce proximity effect, and then that would be another way of achieving Majorana fermions. But I just have one comment, two comments here. One is that this system would explicitly break time rule symmetry because of the presence of additional magnetic field. So one may ask how superconductivity and magnetism can coexist with each other. That may be a potential problem. Another problem is that to fine-tune the Fermi energy to be within this energy gap, that means that the system has a very low electron density. In that case, disorder will be a potential issue. One may need high quality samples. Now, so basically the situation now is that we have two kinds of candidate systems for Marianas. Each one has its advantage and disadvantages, and experiments on both systems are now underway. So we have a situation like some kind of a race for Mariana fermions. Yeah, okay. The disadvantages of our proposal is that these materials, these topological insulin materials, they are only discovered like 2 years ago. And right now, the situation is that they're not very good insulators. So ideally, you would say these are insulators. It only has metallic surface states, so current only runs through the surface. But so far, it was found that these materials are more metallic-like. These S-grown samples are metallic-like. It goes into the bulk as well. But in the past few months, there's been a lot of progress in this direction. So people now definitely have what they call non-metallic samples. And I think it will take a while before they get truly insulating samples. Yeah, if that is achieved, that'll be good for us. Okay. Oh yeah, by the way, I should also, there's another thing that right now people are trying to do is to find a good selector that have good proximity effect with this. So I showed you that there's already good proximity effect between bismuth antimony and niobium. So bismuth antimony is a topological insulator, but it's not the best one. Best one is something like bismuth selenide and bismuth telluride with a single direct surface state. And proximity effect has not been demonstrated in that system. Whereas the good thing about this Maryland proposal is that this indium arsenide is well known to have a good proximity effect with selectors. So that's their advantage. So I will not go into the detail of saying which one is better, which one is not. But what I'll focus on instead is anticipating the experimental realization of Marana fermions. How do we detect them? How do we test this non-locality? And so what I'm going to say from now will be pretty much platform independent, independent of specific realizations. Okay, so the first thing I imagine one need to do is to detect the presence of the Marana bound states. The simplest way of doing that probably is just to do tunneling experiment. So imagine that we have a system which leads to two Marana bound states. So here, for example, I use this nanowire system. Then we bring in another non-momental lead, and we apply a voltage difference between the non-momental lead and the selector, and we measure the current between them. Now, the signature of Marana is that it will lead to a zero-energy resonance. The differential conductance would have a peak at zero bias, and it should reach, at zero temperature, it should reach 2E squared over H. And it will have a resonance peak. So, So I think that's certainly something that's probably the easiest to do in experiments. The next step would be to detect the non-local property of Marana fermions. Remember, I keep saying that two Marana bound states together, they define a two-level system. So one can really ask, so from this description, you can already see that something non-local seems to be going on. The two Marana fermions are far apart, so what do I mean really by saying that there's one fermion level associated with it? So this is something that has never been clarified in the literature until now. So consider an isolated selector. Going back to your question, in selectors, this approximation breaks electron number conservation seems a problem. So let's now just consider an isolated selector without connecting to any other leads. In this system, the electron number is conserved for sure. Now, if I have a system, an isolated selector with two Marana bound states, what happens is that the system has the ground state of the system can either have an even or not odd number of electrons. This is dramatically different from ordinary S-wave selector. In the ordinary S-wave selector, remember that electrons want to pair up into Cooper pairs. So in that case, if you have the system would have a lower energy if it has an even number of electrons. For an odd number of electrons, you have to pay an extra energy called the pairing energy. But with Marana bound states present, the ground state of the system does not discriminate between even and odd number of electrons. What you can see that the two states, 0 and 1, that I keep referring to by this Poisson level, these two states, 0 and 1, have different fermion number Mach 2. So that's why the ground states can accommodate either even or odd number of electrons. Moreover, there's a hidden entanglement between these two spatially separated Majorana's. So the simplest way to see that is to consider a thought experiment. So imagine I start with a system with two n electrons, with an even number of electrons, and I add another electron into the system. If I add electron into the Majorana bond state on the left, I get a ground state with 2n plus 1 electrons. I can also add electron to the right, add it to the right Majorana bond states. I get another state with 2n plus 1 electrons. But these two states are actually exactly the same state. The system only has a two-fold degeneracy. This is different from, for example, the polyethylene problem. Some of you may be familiar. Basically, it's, you can think of it as some impurity levels in a semiconductor or an insulator. In that case, if I have two bond states, these are really states that I can accommodate electrons. So if I add electron from the left, I get one state. Add electron from the right side, I get another state. These two states are orthogonal. But here, the interesting thing is that I add electron to the right Majorana bond state or to the right. They exactly give me the same, the same ground state. Okay, that's yeah. Yeah. Then that just said this. That just says then you still you add electron to the left and to the right, give you the same states, except that these two states, the state with 2n electrons and the state with 2n plus 1 electron, their energy are slightly different. So there is a splitting, but the splitting is between the many-body state. The splitting is between the state of the whole system. So since you mentioned this, so I keep saying Majorana bond state, but I hope this thought experiment can convince you that Majorana bond state should not be really called a state. It's not a state where it can accommodate electrons. For example, if I add electron to the Majorana bond state, you can ask, what's the charge density profile of the system? Now, ordinarily, you would think that if you add electron to some localized bound states, I would end up having more charge here. But if you look at it, if you compare the density profile of this system when you add one electron and with before, the density profile looks exactly the same, almost exactly the same. The density is uniform in the system. And that's one way you can think about it. The system is really a supernatural. You know, charge is floating everywhere inside the supernatural. So Majorana bond state is a place where you can add electrons without costing energy. It's not really it's not a quantum state, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
System, I understood it. So you one spin up Majorana and one spin down.
No, Majorana fermions, the system does not have a spin rotational symmetry, so I cannot talk about up and down electrons. They're all mixed. So
but there's really only. What prevents you from having only one red dot in your
system?
What prevented you from having only one of these defects in the system?
One defect? Oh, yeah, okay, that's a good question. Yeah. So there can never be a system where you only have one Majorana bond state. They always come in pairs.
But physically, this red dot was some defect you made in your.
No. If you start with your system, right, there's no way you can just create a Majorana bond state if it's not the right thing to start with. You have to find some many-body state which can support it, can support Majorana. If you take an S-based method, there's no way you can do to it.
I guess what that can produce this feature was represented really a system where there was a blob, a blob with two specially separated locations.
Yeah, this green just represents the right system that can support Majorana and can have Majorana bond states. And this, for example, these two Majorana bond states, you can think of them as two vortices in this supernatural. Is that a question?
I'm just saying these vortices are created in pairs, always.
Yeah, it's always created in pairs, yeah. That's right.
Is this literally just a vortex in the supernatural? I think one of your models.
In one of the models, it is. In one of the systems, yeah. Like here, it really is a vortex. So in the other system, like in here, yeah. It's really the end of a one-dimensional system.
So when you speak about vortex, is it something that you induced from outside, or is it something?
It's induced from outside. You can apply magnetic field to induce a vortex.
Okay. But when you do it, you get always an even number.
You always get an even number. Yeah, okay. Let me, two questions. So let me
the location of the work.
Right, let me, is there a chalk?
Let's see the box.
Right, yeah. So if you take ordinary, let's say, that's actually a good question. So if you, for example, you take the original Reed and Green model, so they have a 2D system, right? And it will say that, let's say I apply a various form on FU. So then you might think, you will say, okay, the system may only have one vortex, right? What happens then, remember that this system also has edge states, right? So when you thread this flux, H over 2E flux, the edge states, so the system is always is large, but still it's always finite. So the edge states, remember I draw this picture. So because of the finite size, it's always quantized into these tiny levels with a little bit of space in between them. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't thread flux, you will exactly miss this zero energy state. So you don't have a zero energy amount. But now if you put an H over 2E flux, all the spectrum shift halfway.
Yes.
So that you end up having a state that hits zero exactly. So in that sense, you have one Meyer bound state here in the vortex four, and another one near the boundary.
Where if you put two units of flux, you don't need to have anything on the boundary.
Yeah, exactly. And now you can ask, how is this realized in a 3D topological integer, right?
But sorry, do you need two equal and opposite fluxes?
No, you don't. Depends. Well, okay, depending on how you view it. If you view
the zero mod two, is it?
Sorry.
I mean, so do I need two identical fluxes or opposite fluxes? If I want nothing on the boundary,
I think two identical fluxes would.
Well, you need either zero flux or two times H over 2E vortex. Both would give you nothing on the
boundary. Either zero or
an even integer of H over 2E.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is in the original Reed and Green model. Or you can think about in our case, if I have a 3D topological integer, it's going to happen. There you can see that I can cover everywhere with symmetries, right? Because that's necessary to give me a symmetric state at this interface. But then if you thread flux, you always have at least two vortices. So again, and nature solves this problem. And the reason because...
That's the vortex anti-vortex.
Yeah, vortex anti-vortex, exactly. And you have to do that because if I only have one Meyer bound state, then there will be a problem of, I mean, the Hilbert space won't be right, basically. You don't have the right Hilbert space. All right. Basically, let me give a quick summary here. So Meyer bound state is a place where you can add electrons, and if you add electrons to one Meyer bound state, and you can take it out from the other, basically. So based on this effect, I propose a so-called teleportation experiment that can detect the non-locality of my bound states. So imagine that I have a finite supersized simulator with a finite charging energy, and if I connect them to two leads, each lead can talk to one Majorana bound state, and I can set up a voltage difference between the two leads, V. If the bias voltage is smaller than the charging energy of the system, what happens is very interesting. In that case, there will be a big conductance from lead one to the lead two. That's already something interesting because if I do this experiment in the ordinary simulator, the conductance is almost zero. And second, for comparison, for example, I can move this lead to the middle part of the simulator. Then the current will drop to zero. Okay. So, but when I connect the two leads to my bound state, and if the bias is small, I get a large conductance of order E squared over H. Moreover, this charge transport from one Meyer bound state to the other is phase coherent. This is something, for solid state physics, this is something surprising because the system really is although I call it a macroscopic system, it's pretty large. It has millions and millions of electrons, and yet electron transport from one side and go out to the other side is still maintaining phase coherence. What I mean by non-locality is that the phase coherence, if I have a plane wave of electron coming in, I have a plane electron coming out, a plane wave of electron coming out, there's a definite phase lag, right? It's phase coherence, so there's a phase lag between them, and this phase lag actually is independent of the distance between the two Majorana bound states. So that's the signature of non-locality. It's as if the electron has gone through, going tunnel into one Majorana bound state, sort of go out from the other, but doesn't travel through distance. In that sense, it's a non-local effect. Yeah.
Zero conductance in the regular superconductor, yeah. Just because of charging energy.
Just because of charging, not just because of charging energy, actually. Charging energy here, you also have charging energy, but basically, if you have an ordinary SU semiconductor, you have to pay a pairing energy to take an electron out. It's that extra energy that forbids it. But when you have a Majorana bound state, you can add electrons to a system without costing a pairing energy. That's how it happens. And the fact that it has phase coherence is even more surprising. And that's because, since you are a solid state expert, so I'll just say that if you evaluate the Green's function, single particle Green's function, you'll find it's non-zero and doesn't decay with the distance between parameters. I think I have a slide here, yeah. So this is probably the most technical slide, but I'll just use a few maybe 1 or 2 minutes to explain. So if you have an ordinary semiconductor without Majoranas, then the energy spectrum is something like this. It has two branches. One branch is when the system has an even number electron, and one spectrum is when the system has an odd number electron. So the curvature of these lines represent a finite charging energy, but you also have two different branches due to an extra pairing energy. But when your system have two Majoranas, the two curves collapse into one. You only pay charging energy when you add electrons, but you don't differentiate between even and odd. So the even and odd effect goes away. Moreover, the Hilbert space of the system you can view it as a product of the psi, the fermion level associated with two Majoranas, and also a tensor product with the number of total electron charge. But there's a constraint. It's like a gauge symmetry in the problem. The fermion parity associated with this Majorana bound state is exactly the fermion number, the electron number mod 2. So that's why you only have a twofold degeneracy, basically. There's a hidden relation that relates the fermion parity of Majoranas with the electron number in the system. And then one can work out the tunneling problem in the simplest limit. You can view the system only fluctuates between two charge states, two electrons and two plus one electrons. Then one can have, so this is a simple idea, but it took me a long time to find, to exactly solve the problem. The key part is that one can have a mapping that maps combine Majorana operator, electron spin operator, and get a fermion operator. This is the exact mapping, basically. So after this mapping, you can exactly map the original problem of tunneling through Majoranas into a simple resonant level tunneling problem, which is what we know about in elementary quantum mechanics course. That's how this problem can be solved. So there's some fascinating, I think there's some fascinating mathematical structure in here that this is the fun part. So the Majorana operator is something like in between the spin operator and the fermion operator. On the one hand, I can decompose a complex fermion into a linear superposition of two Majorana operators. On the other hand, I can always decompose a spin, electron spin operator into a product of two Majorana operators. So Majorana operator is really something that's magic. It links both the spin operator and the fermion operator. All right, so from an experimental point of view, to detect the non-locality of Majorana bound states, the first step is to just do this experiment. One can see there's a finite conductance from two leads. And then to measure the phase coherence, one can design an interferometer geometry where there are two passes. One goes through the Majorana bound states. The other one just is a direct pass. And the signature of phase coherence is that the conductance that one measure would depend periodically on the flux that's enclosed by the passes. Okay, so in the last 5 minutes, I'll talk about a next step beyond detecting Majorana bound states, which is to braid the Majorana fermions to detect the non-abelian statistics. Okay, so the
So in order to move Majorana fermions around, it's more efficient to consider a two-dimensional system where, you know, Majorana fermions can move around each other instead of just the end of a one-dimensional system. So let me go back to a three-dimensional topological insider where it has a two-dimensional surface. And so the key elements in this proposal is to have a signature topological insider, signature line junction. In this case, this line in between really becomes a sort of a wire for Majorana fermions. So Majorana fermions can move along this this line depending on the phase difference between the two signatures. One can move Majorana fermions along this one-dimensional line. And another element here is when we have three signatures deposited on top of the topological insider, they make into this kind of Y junction, and the this center here can host a Majorana bound state. So depending on the relative phase, there's a large parameter space where a single Majorana bound state exists. So it's like a storage register for Majoranas. So combining these line junctions and tri junctions, one can imagine something like this, which is a signature array on topological insider. So every hexagon represents a signature island. So they are all deposited on top of a topological insider, which is not shown here. And then one can look at you know at the place where three signatures join. This Majorana bound states can exist here. So this setup allows one to create Majorana bound states, braid them, and measure them. So let me just say briefly how in principle, it can work. So imagine one can control the relative phase of signatures. Then one can start from a ground state where all the signaling phases are uniform. And by tuning the signaling phase between two neighboring signatures, one can effectively create a pair of Majorana bound states. And then by controlling the signaling phase in the middle part, one can basically move the Majorana fermions around. The basic idea again is that you can view these Majorana fermions as attached to the vortex, and when the vortex moves around a closed loop, the subnetting phase inside the loop increases by 2 pi. This is a known effect. Here we use the inverse effect. Imagine that one can control the phase of the subnetter so that we increase it by 2 pi. In this case, these vortices would have to move around. So that's how we can braid the two Majoranas. And finally, in order to measure Majorana fermions, we want to change the phases back to its original value, and that will basically make the two Majorana fermions delocalize, and they will eventually merge into each other. In that case, the Hamiltonian of the system goes back to itself, but the system now can either go back to the original ground state or it can go into an excited state. That will be a signature of non-abelian statistics. The fact that after you do all these operations, the Hamiltonian goes back, but your state doesn't go back. You end up in an excited state. And in this setup, you can distinguish ground state and excited states by either measuring the number of quasi-particles in here, or you measure the supercurrent. So in principle, there's a way to measure the state of Majoranas. So let me just illustrate how all this works with Keynote. So start with a uniform array of signatures, create a pair of Majorana fermions on the left, and then create another pair on the right. Because the Majorana fermions are created from the ground states, the state of the whole system can be represented as a product, 0 and 0. The first 0 represents the state of the two Majorana fermions on the left. The second 0 state represents Majorana fermions on the right. Now I increase the phase of the signature island on the center and increase by 2 pi. So that will make the two Majorana switch their positions. So when this happens, non-abelian statistics will tell us that the system evolves into a different state, an entangled state. And then we annihilate the Majorana fermions, and what we could find is that we measure the current here and here. which is basically measuring 0 and 1, we'll find probably 1/2 of getting 0 on the left and probably 1/2 of getting getting 1 on the left. The same for what happens on the right side, but the two results should be correlated. That would be a signature of non-Abelian statistics in this setup. Okay, so let me stop here. So the main the take-home message is here that Majorana fermions, they are the simplest conceptually they are the simplest non-Abelian quasi-particles. There's a very well understood mean field theory for them, and probably they are the most promising one to be realized and detected in the future, and just by measuring current and voltage in the solid state environment, and if these Majorana fermions can be observed, that we can learn something fundamental about nature. So that's talk. Thanks.
Octal?
Yeah.
Electron?
Yes. Absolutely. So in this, let me go back. Yeah, so S wave and P wave basically means the octal of the Cooper pair. So in the model that I showed, So, for example, in this system, you can basically view the two sides as octals. Right? So, the electron wave function is being positive here and negative here. That is, like, it's octals.
Okay. Are there any more questions? Again, open the questions up more generally. So, Lee was first.
Yeah, so in the history of the relationship between condensed matter physics and fundamental particle physics, there's a lot of interchange. And we in particle physics have learned a lot from ideas developed in condensed matter physics. So can you envision something in the future of this? So for example, might it be that there would be an application of these ideas to, for example, thinking about constituents of quarks or leptons in terms of
Exactly. So so there are quite a lot of research along this direction. In high energy physics, electrons are made up of more fundamental constituents like quarks. In condensed matter physics, the underlying object that we study is always electron. But it turned out that in a many body system, the quasi particles that emerge, the quasi particles are basically they are sort of particle-like objects that we use to efficiently describe the low energy excitation of the system. They're hypothetical objects in the sense that they only exist inside the system, right? They don't exist outside it. But they are also real in the sense that their quantum numbers like charge, like statistics, like spin, they all can be measured. So they are every bit as real as the electron itself. So along this direction, there are proposals of something called a slave particles, where electrons sort of break up into more fractional constituents that carry, let's say, fractional value of charge E. Yeah, there are definitely a lot of research along that direction.
So my question is, just to sort of break it up, I mean, there used to be a set of models called prion models, which were attempts to look for constituents of electrons and quarks as made up of triples of more fundamental things called prions.
Yeah.
And these failed.
Uh-huh.
They were incompatible with basic dynamics of non-Abelian gauge theories. And it was impossible to make chiral bound states of these more fundamental things. But might there be a mechanism, I mean, thinking about the ways in which your anions combine in, you know, if you take the reverse picture, if you tell the story you told backwards, you could tell a story where the Majorana fermions come first and they're fundamental, quote,
uh-huh.
and then you would discover electrons and holes from working out the many body physics.
So
is it possible that there's a backwards way of thinking about quarks and leptons as being, you know, made out of things that, that might look like quasi-particles at first, but then turn out to be more fundamental.
Yeah, so, right, so, okay, so one can take that point, I guess one can take that point of view and say maybe one can, you know, okay, I'm not exactly sure, but okay. I guess one can take that point of view and say that the maybe our world is made up of some lattice model of lattice things. Is that what I'm asking? And then at low energy, we get something like leptons, like quarks.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That would be some immersion point of view, right?
Nice.
You took this honeycomb thing at the end.
Yeah.
And you made this zero cross zero.
Yeah.
And then you turn around the. Yeah, maybe you should go to that.
Right.
You turn around the red one and the blue one, you loop them across, and that gives you an entangled bell-type state.
Yes,
right?
Yes, right.
So how feasible is it to make a GHZ state, and is it feasible to do experiments where you've got a triplicate entanglement?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's see, good question. So that would require three pairs of Majorana constants.
I'm thinking how you turn them around each other. There should be a way of doing it, but it's just not clear.
So one thing, okay, one I haven't thought about this problem, but I guess the first question I would say is, first, as I mentioned earlier, that there's only a discrete set of operations you can do on the Majorana bound states, which means that you can only get a certain discrete set of states. So I don't exactly know whether GHZ state is included in that set or not. That would be the first question. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer right now. And if it is within that set, I'm pretty sure that you can just do grading to achieve that. Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
In that same picture, in the first step, you created a pair of Majorana fermions or bounds.
Yes.
What did that mean experimentally? What did you have to do? What were you actually doing to create those?
If you create them, when you create them from the ground state of the system, it's hard to tell, because one way to measure the state of the qubit of Majorana is to bring them together and merge them. Now, you start from the ground state and that means that when you bring the two Majoranas back again, the system will go back to the ground state. So it's hard to tell. What you can tell.
I'm not asking how to detect it. I'm just asking what it meant experimentally to create it. What operation did you do?
I just changed the synthetic phase. Just change the phase of the synapse, which you can imagine doing by threading my netflux. Exactly.
So that's what I thought. Yeah, you're putting a flux. And then when you change the phase further, does that mean moving the flux, or are you doing something
exactly.
else?
Yeah, exactly. So then when I say you change the phase in the middle, you can imagine threading my net flux through a synapse loop. That will change the relative phase between neighboring synapses.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I should admit that it's probably very challenging for this proposal to, in the present form, to make it work, because you have to imagine tuning the relative phase between so many synapses. Mm-hmm. So one way of doing that is thread my net flux through many, many different loops. Mm-hmm. That would be quite challenging. But I hope maybe, in fact, I mean, there's also recent work use similar ideas not in the topological integral system, but in networks of nanowires. So this is work by Jason Alessia and Matthew Fisher and others. So they also envision a way where you can move my fermions in a network of nanowires.
I see.
Yeah.
They
use this nanowire. This is the second of the Kennedy system that I mentioned. Yeah.
I have a totally different question also.
Sure.
You're creating sort of exotic particles here.
Yeah.
In context of relativistic field theories, we have a spin statistics theorem that's very well known. Is there some analog of such a theorem, a general relationship?
I kind of doubt it. The reason I doubt it is that, remember this, I keep painting this, the Majorana bound state is really not a quantum state, right?
And also, I don't think there's an analog of Majorana bound states in high energy physics. So the object here is a more precise language would call something like an icing anion. This Majorana bound state is an anion, it's a non-abelian anion. And sometimes people call it icing anion, but in the community of superconductivity community, people use the word Majorana bound states. But I hope I can convince you that it's not really right to think of it as a quantum state. There's no Hilbert space associated with this object, basically. You have to have, you can get the right Hilbert space from two Majorana bound states, but not a single one. Yeah.
So there's two questions at one about this.
But it is analogous to the quasi-particles in a vacuum quantum pulse, right?
There is some aspect which is analogous to that. But
I just asked because I thought there they had sort of shown some kind of spin statistics.
Okay. I think this is a very good question. I don't think this has been very carefully studied. So I think one thing I can say for sure is that there's one difference between Soon-Nutter and the fractional quantum Hall state at fitting factor 502. In the quantum Hall state, the system is incompressible, mm-hmm. whereas for the Soon-Nutter, you know, charges are moving around. It's a compressible system. So that's why this non-local conductance measurement proposal that I showed, that cannot work in a five-half system. Imagine the five-half system, you connect leads to two quasi-particles, right? There's no way you can tunnel charge into it. The system is incompressible. Mm-hmm. And even if you cost a lot of energy and add charge in, it won't propagate from one side to the other side. What happens in the Soon-Nutter, this is a good time to say this. What will happen in the Soon-Nutter, if one do a microscopic calculation, what happens is that if I connect a lead to a Majorana bound state electron panel in, but this electron sort of fractionalized into its charge part and its statistics part. So there's a precise way of doing this, of writing this down. So I can write an electron operator, I can express the internal of the quasi-particle in the Soon-Nutter. So because all other states have a finite gap, the only leading order term is this Majorana operator. So the dots represent, you know, quasi-particle states above the pairing gap. This e to the I 502 represents the Soon-Nutter phase, and this gamma is a Majorana operator. So they always come in pairs. But when you add electron to the Soon-Nutter, the Soon-Nutter phase propagates from one side to the other side. In the form of plasma waves. It's a very fast thing. Whereas this Majorana fermion basically keeps track of the statistics of the electron. So that is transferred from one side to the other when you have Majorana bound states. If you don't have Majorana bound states, the charge can still propagate from one side to the other side in terms of plasma waves. But there's no way you can take the fermionic excitations out. That goes back to your question. For S wave Soon-Nutter, it's this part that doesn't get transmitted, that doesn't lead to conductance.
So maybe I could ask you to extend that, and let me rephrase Raphael's question in a simple language, which what I think was Raphael's question.
Yeah.
If I have an anion and I rotate it,
yeah.
2 pi, there's a phase change. If
yeah.
I have two anions, and I exchange and I braid them, there's a phase change. A spin statistic, the analog of spin statistics theorem would be a relation between those two kinds of phase changes.
I see. Yeah, okay, now I see your question. Okay, by spin, you really mean its transformation property under rotation.
Under
yes.
2 pi rotation.
Yes. I think in that sense, yeah, I don't know. I think there is some kind of spin. Yeah, I agree. In that sense, there is some spin statistics theorem. Okay. I think there is.
Well, there is in the quantum Hall case, so maybe there is.
I think that in this case, it should also work. Yeah. Okay, I see the question. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, in that sense. Right. So, let me just clarify. So by spin here, we don't really mean the angular momentum. Well, okay, the system doesn't have rotational symmetry because it's a solid state environment, right? But we always can ask the question, what if I rotate the system by 2 pi?
Right.
That's always a symmetry.
What's the phase change?
Right, that's the phase change. In that sense, there is this. Yeah, I agree, there should be a spin statistic relation. Yes.
Do you know how it would be proved?
Yeah, sorry, I don't know. Well, not at least. Yeah.
Okay, that was the last question.
Just in relation to this point that the creating Majoranis does not give the universal spot on computer, are there other systems that...
Yeah, yeah, there are something... Yeah, there are annuals that can give you a universal quantum computer. One example is something called Fibonacci annuals. But I don't know the details, so...
That's a sort of proposal for a physical system, or that's a...
That is a proposal for a quantum Hall state at another fitting factor, yes.
Let's thank Leon.